Realize for Atma, the personality of Godhead, Raksha, the higher truth. Translation by thus situated in the highest transcendental state, the mind ceases from all material reaction and becomes situated in its own glory, transcendental to all material conceptions of happiness and distress. At that time, the yogi realizes the truth of his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He discovers that pleasure and pain, as well as their interaction, which is attributed to his own self, are actually due to the false ego, which is a product of ignorance. Part 1 by Srila Prabhupada. Forgetfulness of one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a product of ignorance. By yoga practice, one can eradicate this ignorance of thinking oneself independent of the Supreme Lord. One's actual relationship is eternally that of love. The living entity is meant to render transcendental loving service to the Lord. Forgetfulness of that sweet relationship is called ignorance. And in ignorance, one is impelled by the three modes of material nature to think himself an enjoyer. When the devotee's mind is purified and he understands that his mind has to be doubtful with the desires of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he has attained the perfection of a transcendental state, which is beyond the perception of material distress and happiness. As long as one acts on his own account, he is subject to all the material perceptions of so-called happiness and distress. Actually, there is no happiness. Just as there is no happiness in any of the activities of a madman, so in material activities, the mental concoction of happiness and distress are false. Actually, everything is distress. When the mind is doubtful to act according to the desire of the Lord, one has attained the transcendental state. The desire to Lord it over material nature is the cause of ignorance. And when the desire is completely extinguished, and the desires that are dovetailed with those of the Supreme Lord, one has reached the perfection of state. Upalabham parakashta. Upalabham means realization. Realization necessarily indicates individuality. In the perfection of liberated state, there is actual realization. Nibritya means that the living entity keeps its individuality. Oneness means that he realizes happiness in the happiness of the Supreme Lord. In the Supreme Lord, there is nothing but happiness. Anandamaya Bhasha. The Lord is by nature full of transcendental happiness. In the liberated state, oneness with the Supreme Lord means that one has no realization other than happiness. But the individual still exists. Otherwise, this word, upalabha, indicating individual realization of transcendental happiness, is not happening. Thus situated in the highest transcendental state, the mind ceases from all material reaction and becomes situated in its own glory, transcendental to all material conceptions of happiness. At that time, the yogi realizes the truth of his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He discovers that pleasure and pain, as well as their interaction, which he attributed to his own self, are actually due to the false ego, which is the product of ignorance. So, Kapildev is explaining the sign of Sankhya. Actually, all transcendental process for spiritual advancement ultimately leads to devotional service. there are many processes. Namely, there is shamsa, there is yoga, there is karmananda section of practicing or performing sacrifices. Although the processes are different, but the ultimate goal is the same. And that ultimate goal is devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of God. Vasudeva Bhagavati. Bhakti Yoga Prayojana. So ultimate goal is Bhakti Yoga, a devotional service unto Vasudeva, who is the Supreme Personality. There are many processes, but all these processes are actually leading to Vasudeva. Those Padre Jari Roti, Shrama Guruji, if all these processes don't lead unto attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it is to be understood that it's just a useless waste of time. So here also we are seeing that this sankha process, sankha means the analytical study, the material nature is analyzed. And thus, there is a proper understanding of what this material nature is. And through that analysis, they come to the platform of understanding the spiritual reality. And then in that spiritual reality, the spiritual activity is called devotion. If we go back to the spiritual sky, then the activities that will be involved or that will be engaged in is called devotion. So whoever is elevated to the spiritual platform must become engaged in devotion. So all the paths, although apparently may appear to be different, ultimately lead to this one point. So here, through Kapil's teaching, it becomes very, very clear that how devotional service is the ultimate object. When the mind becomes free from the duality of the material nature, the duality of pleasure and pain, the duality of good and bad, duality of light and decline. So this material nature is full of duality. So when the mind becomes free from that duality, then one becomes situated in the transcendental platform. And in that transcendental platform, what does one do? One becomes engaged in the loving devotional service unto the Supreme Personality. And here, one very important consideration is that we can see that how one actually needs the spiritual master to explain this science of Krishna. And the spiritual master must be a devotee of Krishna. Therefore, it has been mentioned in the scriptures that unless and until one comes to, or unless and until one becomes initiated by a bona fide Vaishnava devotee, then his spiritual advancement is stifled, is bound to be stifled, or he will not be able to make spiritual. Avaishnava upadeshena mantrena nidayasthate. It's actually a very heavy statement in the scripture. It says that if one receives the mantra Vedic mantra from an avaishnava, from a non-devotee, then mantra, he knows that mantra will lead him to heaven. That same mantra, which is actually the Vedic mantra, but if it is received from a non-devotee, will lead him to, or will take him to hell. Niraya means hell. Mantra no niraya the project. Project means goal. One goes to hell. And here we can see why it is very important to have a Vaishnava guru. Because unless the spiritual master is a devotee of Krishna, he cannot actually guide to that ultimate point of devotion. A non-devotee can never lead one to the path of devotion. Now all the Vedic injunctions and all the Vedic practices are leading to devotion. So how can one be led to the point of devotional service if the guru himself, the path, the person who is showing the path, himself is not a devotee? Therefore, the guru must be a devotee. Kiva mitra kiva nashi shudra ke nenoi jai krishna tattva vetta. The guru must be a devotee. The guru must know Krishna, and he himself must be engaged in loving devotion. Yes, this point I was making because generally when one reads Shankha Siddhanta, he may end up in an impersonal understanding. One may think that, at the most one may think that the ultimate goal of Shankha or Yoga is to recognize the super soul. Generally, they think the ultimate goal is Brahman realization. Beyond the duality of the material nature is total neutrality. Beyond the duality or beyond the variegatedness of this material nature, the misconception is that there is total neutrality. Or a plane where there is no variety, there is no form, there is no quality, there is no activity, there is ultimately means there is nothing. So Brahma, according to the impersonalist, is nothing. Not impersonalist, but the Mayavada. Brahma, according to the Mayavada, means nothing. There is no variety, there is no form, there is no activity, there is no movement, there is nothing. So what is there? If there is no potency, if there is no activity, if there is no cause, if there is no variety, that place must be very, very boring. Like a desert. Is it nice to be being in a desert? Which is just nothing but a vast tract of sand, a terrible heat and glaring light. The Mayavada is saying that experiencing that light is the real source of joy. But they can see the light very dazzling sunshine in the middle of a desert. But is it going to be nice? Is it enjoyable to be in the middle of a desert? At least in the desert there is some variety, but according to their concept, according to their Mayavadi understanding, even that much of variety is not there in Brahman realization. In the desert, at least you can see some sand dunes, and you can see the sunset, sunrise, I think it's very beautiful. But in the Brahman Jyotiri, that variety is not there. So what to speak of the variety of different tastes, like sweet, sour, bitter, all the tastes that one derives from eating food, or different other tastes that one enjoys in different types of emotions, two different types of emotions like laughter, anger, chivalry, pathos. These emotions are also are very relishable. Like, especially the emotions like laughter. Also emotions, in certain cases, the emotions of chivalry. So, in Brahmajyoti, these varieties are not there. So, if one is elevated to Brahman realization, what is the big achievement? It's actually a very, very boring, to be situated in a very boring because enjoyment comes from variety. And if the variety is not there, then it must be very different. So, to be situated in Brahmajyoti is actually even worse than being situated in the material. At least in the material platform, people are getting some sort of illusory enjoyment. But in Brahmajyoti, even that enjoyment is not there. Therefore, a devotee says that to be situated in Brahmajyoti, Brahmajyoti realization or Kaivalya Mukti is like being in hell. Kaivalya, not of higher. To be situated in that liberty, Sahajya Mukti is something like being in hell. So, a devotee knows that this Sahajya Mukti is very detrimental to one's spiritual progress. There is no achievement in that. There is no gain in this Sahajya Mukti. And like here, we can see this point. The last line is saying, so atman vidhanta upalabdha parapakasya. So atman means to his own self. Vidhante means the attribute. Upalabdha means realized. Para atma means the personality of God. Actually, this word Prabhupada has translated para atma as the personality of God. Para means transcendent. And atma means self or soul. The transcendental soul or the supreme soul. Para means the supreme. And now who is that supreme soul, the supreme personality of God? Now this word can be translated by an impersonalist or a non-devotee as well. Now, just if this one word was translated in a wrong way, then the whole concept would be different. Like Prabhupada is saying, now let's see, Prabhupada is saying, he discovered that the pleasure, and I'm sorry, at that time, the yogi realizes the truth of his relationship with the Supreme Personality of God. But if that word, Param Atma, is translated as a super soul, then what will be the translation? Or what will be the understanding? That at that time, the yogi becomes absorbed in the So there is a difference. Like, becoming absorbed in super soul and being engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is a vast difference between these. What is the basic difference? What is the difference between being absorbed in super soul through meditation and being engaged in loving devotion? There is no activity. Whereas in devotional service there is activity. And this activity is reciprocal. Like when one is engaged in devotional service, then he becomes actively involved in serving the Lord and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is reciprocal. Also, in his own way. like a devotee may render service to the Lord, and the Lord just has to stand there, watching the devotee render the service. The Lord actually becomes of help to reciprocate. And the reciprocation may take place in various ways. Like the Lord may come out and just embrace the devotee. Or Krishna may do all kinds of things. Krishna may even carry the devotee on his shoulder. Krishna can do all things. And this is the difference between devotional service and just and passive perception of the supersoul. Now, Prabhupada actually, that's why Prabhupada, not only Prabhupada's purport, but Prabhupada's translation of Srimad Bhagavatam is also so unique. Prabhupada makes it very, very clear. Often, the scholars actually complain, the Sanskrit scholars complain that no, Prabhupada actually did not translate them literally. He didn't translate, his translation was wrong. But those fools don't realize that Prabhupada is seeing things from the devotional perspective. Therefore, I mean, actually, we should be surprised even if the word Brahma is translated as a Supreme Personality. A devotee's translation or Prabhupada's translation, Prabhupada does that sometimes. Prabhupada translated the word Brahma as a Supreme Personality. Because he is seeing from the devotional perspective. So in his understanding, this Brahma actually means Paramatma. That's why the devotee's understanding of, like Upanishad often mentions the word Brahma for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but our devotee's understanding that Brahma is not impersonal Brahma. That Brahma actually means Parabrahma, the Supreme Personality of God. So, when we read the explanation of the scripture from a bona fide devotee, or from a bona fide spiritual master, a pure devotee spiritual master, then everything becomes crystal clear. Now here we can see when everything is so clear in the translation, thus situated in the highest transcendental state, the mind ceases from all material reaction and becomes situated in its own world. The mind becomes free from material inebriety, material madness, and becomes situated in its own glory. That is, in its purified state of existence. And this state is transcendental to the material concept of happiness and distress. At that stage, the mind is completely free from the duality of this material nature of happiness and pain. At that time, the yogi, now this yogi is not an impersonal yogi, but this is a devotee yogi. The yogi realizes the truth of his relationship with the Supreme Personality of God. Now, here also is another consideration. Like one may practice the process of yoga, Ashtanga yoga, or one may practice the process of Sankha and come to this platform of yoga. But when he attains the yogic perfection, then what happens to him? Let us consider that a yogi sitting in a secluded place like in the Himalaya, on top of Himalaya, which is covered with snow and there is nothing there. And he is performing very, very severe austerity. And austerity means when he practices yoga, what he does, he actually practices to withdraw his senses from the object. That means he frees himself from the bondage of material. So at that time he completely withdraws himself from the object of the senses. That means his mind is not going out anymore. His consciousness is not running externally anymore. In a conditioned state, our senses are always running outwardly. But a yogi who is practicing Ashtanga Yoga, he controls his mind and he controls his senses. So his senses are completely withdrawn, so much so that he doesn't see anything, although his eyes are open. He does not hear anything with his ears. He doesn't taste anything, he doesn't smell anything, he doesn't touch anything. Like all the senses are withdrawn. And that can happen. I mean, we can at least theoretically understand that state. Like when one is under the spell of anesthetic, then what happens? Does he register anything from outside?
No.
And what does anesthetic do? Anesthetic actually withdraws the senses we need. The sense perceptions are withdrawn. Now that is done artificially by some artificial agent called anesthetic. But a yogi, he does it by dint of his own head. So like, for example, when one is under anesthetic, then if his leg is cut off, does he see that? Does he feel that? Did anyone have any operation? Did it? How does it feel? Do you feel anything if your body is not open?
You don't feel it.
Right. Why is that? Because the senses are weak. So similarly, a yogi in a perfect state, his hand or leg may be chopped off, but he won't be able to feel it. Now what does he do? He withdraws the senses in order to project the senses inward. Now when he successfully projects his senses inwardly, then what does he see? At the depth of his heart, he sees the super soul. Because the super soul is situated in the heart. Well, this is another consideration. Not that every yogi through the yoga practice sees the super soul. Even though one may be able to withdraw his senses completely, but he may not see the super soul. Because the perception of super soul is dependent upon the mercy of God. Example is, who remembers the example? Yes, Naraguni is a better example. Naraguni, he saw the Lord in the heart. And seeing him is so ecstatic that he wanted to see him again and again. And he made a great engagement. But he could not. And finally, the Lord instructed him that in this life you won't be able to see him. He spoke to him that in this life you won't be able to see him, but in his next life he will become his associate. So, the perception of the super soul in the heart is actually dependent upon the mercy of the Lord. So, when one becomes situated in that realization, when one sees the super soul in the heart, at a perfected stage of his yoga practice, then he sees the super soul, and in the light of that, he sees himself as a spirit soul. Now the spirit soul is minute, and the super soul is absolute. The spirit soul is atomic and the super soul is absolute. So when someone comes across somebody who is very great, then how does he automatically feel? So you know, when one comes across a great person, then how does it feel? Yes, he feels humble.
Because it's a natural, natural tendency to feel oneself small in comparison to someone who is great. And that leads one to surrender himself unto him. So when a yogi perceives the super soul in the heart, then he automatically surrenders himself unto him. The minute spirit soul spontaneously surrenders himself unto the supreme soul or the supreme personality. And that is called, that surrender is the beginning of devotion. The basis of devotional service is surrender. Can one be a devotee without being surrendered? If someone thinks that he will not surrender to anyone, we can immediately conclude that he is not a devotee. We have seen in the recent past, especially soon after Prabhupada's disappearance, the groups of devotees who said that they wouldn't surrender to anyone. They will surrender only to Krishna. They won't surrender to anyone. Their point was that no one is actually great enough to surrender, that they could surrender to. And we saw very soon, they just drifted away. A person who cannot surrender to the devotees of the Lord, he cannot become situated on the plane of devotees. So surrender is the basic requirement for devotion. Unless and until one becomes surrender, one cannot remain in devotional service. What to speak of making advancement in this? On the other hand, when one is surrendered, then for him spiritual advancement comes very easy. So more surrendered we become, the more we will make advancement. More we will make spiritual advancement. Of course, that surrender should take place to the right place, right place. To the right person. A devotee is surrendered, but that doesn't mean that he is surrendered to anyone else. No, he is surrendered to Krishna and Krishna's representative. He is surrendered to Krishna and whoever represents him. That means he is surrendered to the devotees of Krishna. So when one surrenders unto Krishna or a perfected yogi, after seeing the super soul, when he surrenders unto the super soul spontaneously, then he becomes situated on devotional plan. That's why it is said that the devotional service is the highest rung of the spiritual ladder. When one becomes situated on the devotional service, it is to be understood that he already traversed the different planes of spiritual practice. He has perfected all the sacrifices, he has perfected all the austerities, he has perfected even the Ashtanga Yoga. He is a perfected yogi. It is to be understood that a devotee is already, devotee already attained those perfections. Now one may say, well, but we don't see the power of mystic yoga in a devotee. Like if a devotee is already a perfected yogi, then how come he doesn't display those powers? Or he can't display those powers? The answer to that is like, we became situated on devotional service, not actually by means of our own spiritual endeavor. We have become situated on the devotional plane, on the devotional platform, due to the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. We are actually mercy kids. Like, not, we haven't become devotees by gradual spiritual elevation, which is the normal thing. Normally, people have to gradually come from the Karmakanda section to Gyanakanda section, from Gyanakanda section, after attaining perfection in Ashtanga Yoga, one used to come to the platform of devotion. So in those cases, yes, they were already perfected yogi being situated in devotional service. But we actually being situated on the devotional service simply by the mercy of Shri Krishna and mercy of Shri Chaitanya. We do not have any qualifications ourselves, but Srila Prabhupada made us qualified. He just picked us up and placed us on the highest spiritual path. And being situated there on that platform, we are already superior to all those people. It may sound conceited, but it's a fact. Like just by being situated on this platform of devotional service, devotees are already transcendental to the platform of perfect yoga and other spiritual practices. And his case, a devotee's case, is somewhat like the son of a very rich man. Generally, in order to become a millionaire, one has to struggle very hard, isn't it? One has to make struggle very hard to get there, isn't it? Or can one become a millionaire very easily? Difficult. So, but someone who is born as the son of a millionaire, what about his case? Haridas? He doesn't have to work. He doesn't have to struggle to make the money. His father or his grandfather made it. And just by being born in the family, he inherited that. Now, where the boy, although he's the son of a millionaire or even a billionaire, but when he's young, does he have any money in his pocket? Although he is a millionaire by birthright, but in his pocket he may not have any money. He may even ask his friends, hey, why don't you give me one rice? Or things like that. But when he grows up, in due course of time, he will inherit his father's money. So similarly, the devotee's case is like that. Like, although, because they are young, they may not display those impressive mystic powers at all. But if he remains situated on the platform of devotion, and he can continue to practice it, then someday he will become a pure devotee. And for a pure devotee, his mystic powers are all very significant. For a pure devotee, the mystic powers, the auspicities, serve the devotee like a menial servant. What to speak of the eight types of siddhis or perfect yogic perfection? Even liberation personified with folded hands begs the devotee that will you please allow me to render some service to the people. That is the position. That is how elevated is this fact. And due to our inconceivable good fortune, we somehow received the Prabhupada's mercy, and we have come to the platform of Krishna consciousness, the platform of devotional service. Now, let's take from that confidence. Sometimes devotees go through some depressive phases, especially at the neophyte stage. Devotees go through this depressing period and they say, what's the use? Let me just go and do something else. But
one should not deviate. Once one has come to the platform of devotion, one should not deviate. And the best way to remain fixed up is by remaining in the association of devotees. So, we should always make it a point to remain in that association of devotees and practice the sources of Krishna consciousness. And then as we practice, keep on practicing in a proper way, we will naturally make spiritual advancement. And along with the spiritual advancement will come the necessary spiritual joy that goes with that. Hare Krishna, our glorious Krishna Prabhupada. Does anybody have any questions?
What is the difference between Sapanatana Yogi, someone who meditates, who has a devotional attitude, but doesn't render active in the Lord?
So the question is, what's the difference between a yogi who is meditating upon the super soul and a devotee in Shantara, right? Middle of neutrality. A devotee who is in Shantara, who is not actively involved in rendering service to the Lord, he is actually in a higher platform than a yogi who is meditating on the soul. Because the yogi sees the Lord as the super soul. He is seeing him as an inactive witness. Right? But a devotee in Shantarat, although he himself may not be actively involved in rendering service, but he sees the Lord as an active personality, performing his